Could socialism ever really take off in America? Well, half a century ago, socialists ruled a major American city. It's in the Midwest, and no, not Chicago, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A city better known for beer than radical politics, and yet once upon a time, Milwaukee elected a whole string of socialist mayors, including Frank Seidler.
When the socialists got in, they were interested in clean government. They didn't want any boodling and any corruption and any graft, crooked paving contractors, crooked sewer contractors. And they also wanted better housing. They even went so far as to want municipal slaughterhouses, good hospitals, libraries, museums, general improvement of the working class, good educational systems, universities, and so on. They were much different than any other mayors who were simply in office to take whatever graft was available for them and their partners.
Frank Seidler was the last of Milwaukee's socialist mayors. He ran the city from 1948 to 1960. And that little bit was from an interview we did with him back in 1988.
I'm gonna join one big union by myself.
Meanwhile, producer Halima Shah is curious, and she went to Milwaukee to dig up some more history.
Here's a little known fact. For a third of the 20th century, Milwaukee was led by socialists.
What's the socialist history of Milwaukee?
It was definitely one of the strongholds for the socialists in the late 19th and especially early 20th century.
Kevin Abing is with the Milwaukee County Historical Society. He met me in Lake Park, an iconic park built by the socialists.
Because there was this huge pool of industrial workers in Milwaukee, the socialists were the political force behind the sense that the working class, they deserve a chunk of the pie as well. They were arguing for an 8-hour workday, for reining in child labor.
So is that what the socialists in Milwaukee did? They made it about 8-hour workdays as opposed to a revolution?
Right. They believed in this gradual transition from capitalism to a socialist state. It could take place without a revolution. They could win these things through the ballot box.
And Milwaukee did that successfully. In 1910, Emil Seidel was elected as the first socialist mayor of a major city in the United States.
So why couldn't they last?
Well, the Democrats and the Republicans joined forces to overcome the socialists. There was always those people that equated them with, you know, when the communists took over in Russia, the Red Scare after World War I, and then the whole Cold War after World War II, that kind of drowned out any kind of real influence that the socialists would have had.
We're still at a place right now that has significance to socialists. What's the significance of Lake Park?
Lake Park is really one of the crown jewels of the county's park system, probably one of the more tangible legacies of the socialists. They were the ones who really developed this respite for people to get away from the grittiness of urban life in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee socialists didn't just pioneer the public park system. In the early 1900s, they developed the Garden Homes District, the first public housing the country ever saw. The houses are still standing, so producer Mark Rickers and I went to see them.
Hey, Andrew?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Halima.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
We met Andrew Haug at the park in the center of the Garden District. He works with the Northwest Side Community Development Corporation, which does a lot of organizing around housing in the area. He introduced us to Mother Freeman, who's a big part of the neighborhood.
She has a church in the neighborhood, and she's been just a mother to the whole community for decades. The street right over here is now has an honorary street name, so it's the Mother Freeman Way.
She's been here for a long time.
I was born in 1938. I've been in the neighborhood since 1969. We used to have sack races and watermelon eating contests, and kids could play on the park. It wasn't like it is now where grown-ups have just taken it over so that they can sell drugs and drink. When y'all gonna let the kids have this park?
Huh? They got it right now. They over there
where?
Having fun.
Where?
Y'all don't see them over there?
Man, come on.
She introduced me to Charlotte, who recently moved in.
It's okay. I got 2 bedrooms upstairs and my living room, dining room, and a kitchen in it.
So how many people live with you?
Just me and my roommate. And my grandkids come over.
What kind of place did you live in before you moved here?
I lived in a 2-bedroom. It was a duplex. So I was paying $675 and I pay $700 here. So it's best to have my own house.
Charlotte's front porch is just steps from the park, and she let me inside to see her place.
Can you just give me a grand tour?
This is my living room. Close my door from up. Well, it's supposed to be a dining room. This is my kitchen.
And what's this over here?
And this is leading to my basement.
So this is, it's cozy, like, but it's, you can't be like dancing around in here or
no.
anything. You have to be really
no.
careful.
Yes.
What's upstairs?
My 2 bedrooms.
Family homes built today are generally bigger, but houses like Charlotte's were meant to be an alternative to where a lot of workers lived at the turn of the century, which was tenement housing.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
Cheryl Blue leads The Corridor, a nonprofit. They work on things like economic development and housing around the Garden District.
Do you feel like you see like some progressive politician's vision?
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to live just a big park outside my door and that it was safe, surrounded by businesses of people that lived in the community, and I can just like watch my child out the door playing, and absolutely I can see the socialist influence there. Mm-hmm. Because most neighborhoods aren't like that. Because I used to live in Philadelphia. There's no sidewalk. But here, everybody has a yard. Everybody has a backyard. Everybody has a garage. This neighborhood was envisioned by Mayor Seidel, who lived in this neighborhood for 25 years. And it was a co-op. It's the first municipally sponsored housing co-op in America. So that's why this is a locally historic neighborhood as well as in a national historical register.
So remember Andrew from earlier? He said the neighborhood was an escape from the grittiness of the center city.
You know, this was workforce housing way back in the day when the city undertook to make this a much more beautiful neighborhood than the tenements that were near downtown. This was paradise compared to that.
Hmm. And then for Black people, this was when you made it. When you could come here and live and buy a home in this neighborhood, that really was a status symbol. You have people who were primarily sharecroppers in the South that came here for opportunities. This was the American dream for them. Then their daughters and sons became lawyers and teachers and doctors, all because of that socialist vision of everyone being able to have access to what everybody else had. I mean, I think that just makes sense.
Can you show me where Emil Seidel's house was?
Sure. It's right over here somewhere. I don't know the exact...
The Garden District has changed a lot. It went from a whites-only co-op to privately owned housing to a mostly Black neighborhood.
Hey, how you doing?
You all the noobs?
No, they're doing a story on... You know this is a historic neighborhood right here, right?
On what? This is?
Yes, it is. Very much so.
So we started walking 2 blocks over.
I'm not the historian, but...
But you're definitely a part of this neighborhood. Like, you...
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of the elders here still own these homes. There's been a lot of divestment in the neighborhood, a lot of crime and things like that. And so we're working together to figure out how we can bring that communal aspect back together.
Well, what is that difference? Is it just the standard of living change?
Well, it's when the jobs left, when A.O. Smith left, which would pay someone without even a high school diploma $30+ an hour.
What was A.O. Smith?
A.O. Smith made, what was it, car frames? That's a part of what happened in this neighborhood. You see so many of the houses deteriorating because with the national designation, you have to restore them to their original dimensions, however they were built. So they cost a lot more to restore than they're worth.
So it's a catch-22.
Big time.
You were telling me about this, right, Andrew? Yes.
When the cost to restore the home is a greater cost than what you could ever hope to sell it for on the market, some people actually walk away.
31. This is 41.
And then we came to a two-story rectangular house.
4431 North 25th.
Okay. It has white siding and brown shutters. The front door is green with a little archway above it, and it sits on a small porch.
This is it.
It's boarded up.
You know, what's interesting is I can still see the vision, can't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though it's dilapidated, I can feel that this was a community. The fact that he envisioned it and lived here for 25 years, that says a lot. And I think his son even lived here for a while. It's a family home. That archway, it's just really beautiful.
The door, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think people in your organization consider themselves socialists?
Not at all. People don't call it socialism, but I think that people want a good wage, they want health care, they want to live well, they want good schools for their children and families just like anybody else. So I don't think that people call themselves socialists per se, but I think that a lot of those values are still are in them. And I think that this resurgence will be interesting.
Like in New York.
In New York and all over the country, as a matter of fact. It will be interesting to see how that plays out. Be interesting.
You guys want to walk back?
Yeah. Do you want to cut through the walkway up
here? Oh, sure, we can.
Yeah.
Halima Shah, reporting from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You can see pictures of the Garden Homes District then and now, plus Halima in the field, on her website at ttbook.org.